Well, it's time for us to begin. And please open your Bibles to Psalm 128. Psalm 128. Thank you, brethren, for your participation in our study and presence. We're studying in Psalm 127, 128, both very short psalms dealing with the home, the family relation. And in our study, we are in Psalm 128. We noted that Psalm 127 and 128, as others you can see around these, Psalm 125, Psalm 129, we're just getting the sampling. We're not going to study all of the psalms, but these are psalms of ascent. And the significance of that is these would be songs that people would sing as they were on their way to the temple to worship. And in these two particular psalms, we note emphasis placed on the house of God and the family of God. And we see that emphasized in both of these very short chapters. In our last study, we began in the first verse, and we didn't get very far beyond that. We noted in Psalm 128, verse 1, "Blessed is everyone that feareth Jehovah and walketh in his ways." Two elements in that. Number one, the fear of the Lord is so important, and that's where we're going to begin in our study this morning. We looked at some passages last week. Psalm 19, which, by the way, is going to be the next psalm that we study, Psalm 19. The law of the Lord, as we will deal with that in some degree when we get to it. And then the next psalm, if you're making the list, will be Psalm 33. So that'll have you prepared for what lies ahead. But in Psalm 128, we're continuing to look at some of these statements that are found in the wisdom writing. We looked last week, as we just began to introduce this, in Psalm 19, verse 9. The fear of the Lord is described as clean and enduring forever. We looked at Psalm 111, specifically in verse 10. The name, or the fear of the Lord, is the beginning of wisdom. A good understanding have all they that do His commandments. His praise endureth forever. And we saw in the very first proverb, Proverb 1, verse 7, the fear of Jehovah is the beginning of knowledge, but the foolish despise wisdom and instruction. We said it's a very common theme in the wisdom writing. Proverbs 8, 13, the fear of Jehovah is to hate evil, pride and arrogancy and the evil way, and the perverse mouth do I hate. Now, you've heard that before when we've talked about the proper use or improper use of the tongue. And we didn't quote all of it, but we did talk about pride and arrogancy and the perverse mouth do I hate. So we won't take note of that. The fear of the Lord is the thing that's emphasized. Proverbs 10:27, it tells us that the fear of the Lord prolongs our days. And Proverbs 14:26 and 27, it brings strong confidence and is a fountain of life. And then we concluded last week, I believe, with Ecclesiastes 12, where we were discussing the purpose of life is to fear God and keep His commandments. And the reason for that is God will bring every work into judgment. You're familiar with that. And of course, it's tempting to go back and just review the book of Ecclesiastes, but that's beyond our study this morning. Let's proceed just a little bit, if we may. In Proverbs 23, verse 17, "Let not thy heart envy sinners, but be thou in the fear of Jehovah all the day long." Now, we've studied from Psalm 73, and we want to remember that psalm. It is an expression by a man whose name is Asaph. And in that Psalm 73, do you remember what's got Asaph so perplexed?
That the unrighteous seem to be blessed.
Yeah, the unrighteous seem to be blessed. And here he is, he served the Lord all the days of his life, and all he's had seems like it's just sore trouble all the way through. And he said, when I reflect upon that, he said, I don't understand, and it's just something that kind of boggles my mind. Now, that's Mick's very loose paraphrase. You'll see it in about verse 9, 10, 11, long and through there. But then there's the conclusion. I was perplexed, and it caused me great difficulty until
came to the sanctuary
or went into the house of God. And then I saw the latter end of those evil people, and he understood it. So this is what we want to see. Let not thy heart envy sinners, but fear God and do that consistently. Ecclesiastes 8, 12 and 13. Though a sinner do evil 100 times and prolong his days, yet surely I will know, or I know that it shall be well with them that fear God, that fear before him, but it shall not be well with the wicked, neither shall he prolong his days, which are as a shadow, because he feareth not before God. Now, one of the things that I want to emphasize, and I guess I should say reiterate, as we started this chapter, is from the New Testament book of Romans. We know, and just a real quick review, we all need to, as best we can, try to fix in our minds what's in each chapter. Okay, when we're studying, can we do that? Well, we know we can do that because we've done that with the book of Acts. What's in each chapter? And I want us to do that so that we're studying a particular book, we're so familiar with it, we know what's in the chapter. Maybe not what verse it's in, but if you can be familiar enough to know what chapter, you'll find the verse. Context is what we're talking about. Know the context. Now, you'll remember in the third or the first chapter of the book of Romans, the writer is introducing God. God has made himself known in the creation. Because you didn't believe that, you thought you knew more than God, you worship idols, and God gave you up, speaking to the Gentiles, to practice all manner of idolatry, and the things that characterize that are listed. In the second chapter, you, Mr. Jew, you think you're better than Mr. Gentile, but yet you practice the same things. And then in the third chapter, what advantage then, Mr. Jew, do you have over Mr. Gentile? Well, often when we ask that question, everybody says, no, he didn't have any advantage, but he did. What advantage did Mr. Jew have over Mr. Gentile? The oracles. He had the written oracles of God that contained the promises. Yeah, he had that. Mr. Gentile did not have that, the written oracles. Now, you would like to think that having the written oracles that Mr. Jew could see the promises and be faithful. And all. But the point being then, in verse 9 and 10, is specifically verse 9 of chapter 3, what then? Are we better than they? Are we, Mr. Jew, better than they, Mr. Gentile? No, in no wise. For we before laid to the charge of both Jews and Greeks that they're all under sin. Now, we often emphasize verse 23 to make that point. But here it is in verse 9. And then the writer, strangely enough, gives a laundry list of quotations from the Old Testament to establish that point. And he says, there's none righteous, no, not one. There's none that understandeth. There's none that seeketh after God. And just over and over and over and over again, he's establishing that everybody commits sin. And you saw that in verse 9. You see it again in verse 23. But you see the why in the quotation of verse 18. In verse 18, likewise, a quotation from the Psalms, Psalms 36, verse 1. He says, there is no fear of God before their eyes. No fear of God before their eyes. Now, certainly we know that Psalm 14:1 says the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. So he doesn't fear God. He does what he pleases. But what we want to note here is that sometimes we're jealous of those who do what they want to, and we say, well, they seem to be doing very well. And we need to remember that it should be well with them that fear God. And those who don't, there's consequences. Sometimes we sing a song that was written by H.B. Spafford. Is it H.B. or H.J.? H.B., I believe. Spafford. It is well with my soul. I would suggest to you that the song may very well be premised on this passage. It is well with my soul. And it is with those who fear God. And we can walk through some very difficult things in life if we know and believe the things that God has to say to us. Now, here's the point that John makes. And again, we need to be familiar. Is it H.P.?
H.G.
H.G. H.G. Okay. I knew it was 8 something. Sorry about that. In 1 John chapter 2, I would really like for you to try to remember these verses as well. Good morning. Good to see you. If you can remember these passages as well, 1 John chapter 1 and on into chapter 2. We're studying from the Psalms this morning. Psalms 128. It's good to see you. Glad you're here. And feel free to participate, if you will, in our study. And 1 John chapter 1 and 2 is a reference that we're looking at. 1 John chapter 1 and chapter 2, the writer is emphasizing the need to walk in the light. And we see this bit of emphasis in the second chapter. If you'll drop down in that to verse 2, the writer has identified that if we commit sin, we have an advocate with the Father. In verse 2, he's identified Jesus, the righteous. He is the propitiation for our sins, and not for ours only, but also for the whole world. And hereby we know that we know him if we keep his commandments. He that saith, I know him, and keepeth not his commandments, is a liar, and the truth is not in him. But whoso keepeth his word, in him hath the love of God been perfected. Hereby we know that we are in him. He that saith he abideth in him ought himself also to walk even as he walked. Now, our emphasis upon fearing God and keeping his commandments. But here's the man that says, I know the Lord, but he doesn't do what he says. Doesn't fear the Lord. John said the man's a liar. Now, I had a recent study with a fella, and we were studying this particular passage. And the comment was made, well, that's pretty plain. Let me ask you, you ever call somebody a liar? You ever been called a liar? The Lord called folks liars. And John, in this passage, by inspiration, called these folks liars. Now, do you like to be called a liar? Well, no, nobody likes that. But have you been caught when you were? Don't answer that. I'm not asking for a confession. But I would suggest to you that when you have lied and somebody calls you a liar, there's not much to do, but as we said on the farm, shuck down the corn and confess it. That's what you did. But that's what these folks were doing. The evidence was against them. They're not walking in the truth. They're not keeping the Lord's commandments. But at the same time, they're saying, we know the Lord. No, you don't. For if you know the Lord, you do what he says. If you do what he says, it's because you fear him. Linda?
I feel like it also could be that they were lying to themselves.
Oh, yeah.
just like the scribes and the Pharisees who believed that they were very righteous and Jesus called them wicked. Call them hypocrites.
Yeah. Yeah, there's one thing that we need to remember about a lie. It involves the intent to deceive. Mm-hmm. And you might be intending to deceive Betty Jo, but you might just as well be intending to deceive yourself. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was just going to say, there's a lot of people who call themselves Christians, but you wouldn't know by the way they live.
Oh, no. Yeah, yeah.
And this is a companion verse with James 2. Faith without works is dead. You can say it, but unless you're doing something, you're not showing it.
Well, that's right. And of course, that's the thrust of this passage. Blessed is everyone that feareth Jehovah, that walketh in his ways. Can you separate the two? Well, no. You can't really separate the two. They're basically tied together, and that's just the way that it is. In 1 John 5, you see the same thing. We must love God and keep his commandments. This is how that we show that we fear and we love him. And of course, John said that greater joy have I none than to hear my children walking in the truth. Well, if you're not walking in the truth, you're pursuing a life that's a lie. So you can't really separate these two. And that's what the wisdom writer is telling us. Let's go back to our text. Any comment or question just here? Feel free, please, to speak up. No? All right, look, if you will, now at verse 1. Let's pick up another thought from this verse. Blessed is everyone that feareth Jehovah. We're going to be talking about that in the sermon period this morning. Blessed is everyone that feareth Jehovah, that walketh in his ways. What's that word mean?
Blessed.
Yeah. It means you're happy. Okay. You're blessed. You're happy. Now, there are other variations involved in the definition, but that's the fundamental thing that we want to see. The general rule is that if you do what God says, you're going to be happy. Now, question, does that mean that there aren't any exceptions to the general rule? Sometimes there are things that, cloud our lives, and I think we see that in the life of David, who is likely the author of this psalm. There were things in his life that made life difficult. And it's hard to look on those difficulties and see any joy in them. Case in point, we've made this point a number of times, and I like to underscore it because every time I read it, I think of application to me, and that's, I guess, as we should do. In verse 2 of the book of James, chapter 1, verse 2, he says, "Count it all joy, my brethren, when you fall into manifold temptations." Now, if you just stopped right there, you'd say, "But I had trouble with that," right? Count it all joy when you fall into manifold temptation. But you've got to read the rest of it and see the why. The rest of it says, "Knowing that the proving of your faith worketh patience, and let patience have its perfect work, that ye may be perfect and entire, lacking in nothing." Now, count it all joy when you fall into manifold temptations. You know, just a crude illustration. When I was in college and I'd get the syllabus that tells you what you're going to have to do for the semester. Everybody been there? And you see right down there about midway of the syllabus, you've got all this stuff that's due. You're going to have to read this much material. You're going to have to write reports on this much material. And you're going to have to, before the semester's out, submit a research paper on a particular topic. And you just see this one class beginning to snowball into a great big ball of dreaded work. You ever been there? Well, why are you taking the class? Why don't you just not take that class? Then you don't have all that work to do. But you look at all that, and it becomes such a dread at the time. But why are you taking the class?
You've got a goal.
You've got a goal at the end that's certainly I'll be qualified to do this, or I'll learn this that will help me to do. Count it all joy, my brethren, when you fall into manifold temptation. Well, that's not the objective, just to endure the temptation, is it? The objective is the proving of your faith, the learning of patience, learning to be patient. And so patience then can have its perfect work so that I can be complete, lacking in nothing. Now, what's going to do that for you? Enduring the trials that bring you to that point. Now, does that mean that you look forward to these trials with great anticipation? What a wonderful day it is when I'm suffering. No, that's not the point. But you're looking to the objective and what that will accomplish with you. And I think that the Hebrew writer, those of you who are studying with us in our study on Tuesday night, recall this from the 11th and 12th chapters, where we have all these great heroes of faith that are listed for us. And we won't reiterate that. But as you get into the 12th chapter, the admonition of the first verse is to run the race with patience. And our comment in our Hebrews class was, any race that you're involved in, it's not just the race. If I were to ask Richard, all right, I'll race you to your house and back, I dare say he probably wouldn't. Well, with me being the competitor, he might think that would be funny. But suppose that James or Noah or some of the younger fellows challenge, I'll race you to the house and back. Neither James nor Noah, either one, would look upon that as something, great, great feat. If we're going to do this, we're going to have to prepare, right? There's going to be a certain amount of discipline, preparation that goes into it. And then we've got the crown over here for the victor. And so neither one of you or Richard just going to jump right in there and let's do it right here in a few minutes. No, sir. There's going to be preparation involved with an objective of receiving the crown. And when we look at these great characters of faith that are set forth in Hebrews 11 as our example, and then we run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. One of the things that we emphasized in our Hebrew study is the cross was not the ultimate end. Jesus wasn't just jumping up and down with joy. Oh, Lord, look at here what I get to do. I get to die this awful death. No. He looked for the objective, the crown, at the right hand of God at the end of all of that. You see. Now, when we look at our passage, this is our point. Blessed is everyone that fears Jehovah and walketh in his ways. The happiness that we're looking for is not necessarily in the enduring of the trial. It's what's learned or what's accomplished at the end, isn't it? Just saying, that's without that, it wouldn't be worth the effort. You see. So this is our objective. So happiness, when you eat the labor of your hands and all shall be well with you, you've got some contentment, you enjoy the abundance. And even in this life, the wisdom writer said, better is little with the fear of Jehovah than great treasure and trouble therewith. Can you think of a classic illustration? How about David? When he realized what he had done with Bathsheba and began to suffer the consequences of that, and you read his writing in Psalm 51, you think he understood that better is a little with the fear of Jehovah than great treasure and all this turmoil. Just not worth it. You ever talk to a rich man who was so unhappy with his life? Most of us have had the opportunity to talk with people that were quite wealthy, maybe be friends with people that were quite wealthy, only to find out just how unhappy they really were. So here's our point, isn't it simple? Better is a little with the fear of the Lord. Timothy is reminded, as Paul writes in 1 Timothy chapter 6, that godliness with contentment is great gain. You see, it's not how big your farm is or how much equipment you have or how much money you have in the bank that makes you happy, is it? And this is the objective. Happy is the man that fears God, does what he said. And that's right here in Psalm 128. Any question or comment? Well, we're going to get through this verse, I'm determined. The latter part of it says, many a time have they afflicted me from my youth up, yet they have not prevailed against me. Who do we say wrote that? In all likelihood, David did. Yeah. Now, here's the problem. They have afflicted me from my youth up. You remember when David was just a young man? Who was it that became a primary afflictor, inflictor, persecutor?
Saul.
Yeah, he tried numerous times to take his life. And, of course, they did not prevail. Saul did not prevail. And then, of course, as David became older, had children, his own children began to be the problem. His own son tried to take the kingdom away from him and led his army against David's army. Now, blessed is the man that fears the Lord. David's point is simple. There have been a lot of enemies, but they did not succeed.
My Psalm 128 doesn't
read
that way.
Well, tell me how yours reads. I love it when you tell me that. You know why? Not just you. Sometimes I'm reading a passage out of the American Standard Translation and somebody reads it out of another translation. Mine don't read that way, like what mine said was error. Go ahead.
Yeah, verse 1 and 2 says, how blessed is everyone who fears the Lord and walks in his ways. When you shall eat of the fruit of your hands, you will be happy and it will be well with you.
Yeah. Okay.
That one says, many times have they afflicted me from my youth up.
Well, where did I get that then? I thought I quoted that or cut and pasted that right out of the American Standard Translation. Okay, I may have made a mistake. That's entirely possible.
Yeah, it's not there.
It's just not there. Well, just forget that then.
If you Google it, you might hear where it came from.
Yeah, well, I've misquoted.
From the same version you are.
Yeah, yeah.
That's 129.
That's 129, okay. All right, well, yeah, that's what I did. I went to the next chapter. Cut it from the wrong place. I apologize, Randy. But it doesn't teach error. It is a quote from the next chapter.
The first sentence is correct.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Well, separate one is the first one of the next.
Yeah, that's what I did. I picked it up from the next chapter. I apologize.
So you got 50% of it.
I got to, well, that don't work. Just so you know, that don't work. Yeah. Well, again, the emphasis is upon being faithful. Proverbs 5:18, let thy fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of thy youth. As a loving hind and a pleasant doe, let her breast satisfy thee at all times, and be thou ravished always with her love. When we look at these passages that talk about happiness, happiness, whether it be your family, happiness, whether it be with the circumstances that you find yourself in life, job, friends, family, what's the key element? We're going to talk about persecutions tonight, and one of the things we're going to see in that lesson is that often persecution comes from those that we love the most. But when that becomes the case, whether it's your wife, whether it's your children, what becomes the key element to being happy? Can you be happy with enemies that are so close to you?
Fear God and keep you
in. That's it. And that sometimes presents a challenge, just so you know, right?
Well, that's why Jesus said he who loves father or mother more than he's not worthy of me, he who loves son or daughter more than he's not worthy of me.
Yeah.
God wants to be first in your life, in my life, and sometimes that means turning your back on the children of your parents.
Yes, and as a dear friend of mine who rebuked or chastised me at one point, he said, you can't let those things paralyze you. And dear friends, that's the word, paralyze. It'll do it. God doesn't intend for us to be paralyzed. We've got to move. And the reality is you're going to be moving forward or you're going to be moving backwards. But we can let this kind of thing paralyze us. So we're not moving in the direction we want to. The reality is we're moving backwards, and we don't want that to happen. All right. So trust in the Lord, and the point is, as David said, you'll be blessed in fearing Him and walking in His ways. This is the next point. Thy wife shall be as a fruitful vine in the innermost parts of thy house. Your wife will be like a fruitful vine. It'll be a happy relationship. The Bible very clear in presenting the roles of both the husband and the wife. And in the society that we live in, I would suggest to you that this is quite challenging. There's two or three passages that I want us to look at. I have the task ahead of me in a week or so to preach a lesson on the practical applications of being a Christian in the home. And I'm not going to preach that now. You've heard portions of it in times gone by. But one of the texts that's going to be in that lesson is going to be found from 1 Peter chapter 3, beginning in verse 7. I'd encourage you to turn to that passage. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7. In verse 7, the writer says, ye husbands, in like manner, dwell with your wives according to knowledge, giving honor unto the woman as unto the weaker vessel, as being also joint heirs of the grace of life, to the end that your prayers be not hindered. Now, I don't want to turn our study completely away from the Psalms, but I think that this point that's being made in Psalm 128, verse 3, is critical. Thy wife shall be as a fruitful vine in the innermost parts of thy house. When we see the role of a godly wife, the scriptures teach us, and may have it on a chart, but we'll get ahead of ourselves. Whoso findeth a wife findeth a good thing. Now keep in mind, that is a proverb, that is a general truth. Sometimes a man marries a woman, or a woman marries a man, that becomes a real challenge to their spiritual life. But the general truth is, whoso findeth a wife findeth a good thing. Now, the reason why that's a general truth is, in the beginning, God made them male and female. and said, "For this cause shall man leave father and mother and cleave unto his wife. The two shall be one flesh." And that arrangement in the beginning, God said, was very good. Good. Okay? The only thing that I know about, that I can read about in the beginning that was not good, God said is not good for man to be alone. So whoso findeth a wife, findeth a good thing. And that's the way God arranged it. That's the way that it should be. But when we look in this passage in 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 7, boy, it just speaks all kinds of volumes addressing various elements of that. Ye husbands, in like manner, dwell with your wives. Now, sometimes we so superficially read that that we think that just simply means living at the same address. And always so much more in that. To dwell with. Case in point. The scriptures teach us in Colossians chapter 3, verse 16, let the word of Christ dwell in you richly. Does that mean all it is just you memorize a bunch of scripture? Well, what does it mean for God's word to dwell in you? That's a part of your life. It's a part of your life. Now, husbands, you dwell with your wives. That literally means she's a part, a very close, intimate part of every day of your life. And I used this illustration in a meeting one time, and I always love it when somebody comes to me afterward and they think I'm talking directly to them. And this fellow came out and he said, "You've been talking to my wife?" I said, "No, sir. I haven't been talking to your wife." "No. No." I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, the illustration you used," he said, "is me exactly. I was trying to establish this point. Husbands, dwell with." That is, to be at home with your wife. And then we'll talk about according to knowledge. I said, sometimes folks are so busy. At the end of the work day, they don't have all the work done. So they take a laptop home with them. And when they sit down in their easy chair, they turn the TV on. They're watching a movie. They may have a book over here that they're reading, something else online that they're researching. While at the same time, they're completing work at home. And their wife comes to them and wants to talk or say something to them. And they don't even know they're on the planet. This fellow said, "That's just exactly what I do." He said, "I do that every day." He said, "I've got to stop that. Because this passage says to dwell with." Now, do we see that point? If we want the blessing that the writer of Psalm 128 is speaking of, we want the happiness that comes from that. Men, we got to do our part. We just do. And we're not talking at this point about the one. There's enough to go around. The wife's part and the children's part. I get that. But we're talking about this passage. Your wife will be as a fruitful vine in the innermost parts of thy house. You want to be happy? Do your part. Dwell with her. That means take the time necessary to do that. Now the next part of this passage in 1 Peter 3 verse 7 says, according to knowledge. Now you can tell I've been working on this point for a long time. Both in practice and in preparation to preach it. According to knowledge, most of you have been married for a considerable amount of time. And I was reading some things this morning that was quite informative that said that people's lives change. Did you know you're not the same person you were, say, about 5 years ago? People change. And the statistics that I was reading this morning is that people change about every 5 years. There's enough in their life that makes them somewhat of a different person. Now, does that shock us? So, dwell with her according to knowledge. I was reading some material not all that long ago of a fellow that said, "I married her because she had those beautiful dimples in her cheeks, and lo and behold, when I married her, I got the whole thing. I thought I was just marrying the dimples." Well, duh. What happened? dimples might begin to fade and so forth. Things change, right? So you dwell with her according to knowledge. If you think nothing is going to change in that beautiful 16, 17, 18-year-old girl that you met 50 years ago, and you think, well, everything is going to be just like it was then, you're in for a rude awakening. That's not going to happen. And I'll tell you what, brethren, and here's something that I have personally observed. People get married without this understanding of dwelling according to knowledge. And they get married perhaps at a very young age, and then just within a few years start having children. And the stress of children, that's something else. Most of you are very well aware of that. And it can change the person you're married to. They've got a lot more duties and responsibilities and stresses that they didn't have the day you got married. And so now a whole lot has changed. And you tackle that together, and then the children get into high school and they graduate from high school and they start into college. Now you've got another chapter of life, right? Things are different now than they were 18, 20, 25 years ago. You got a whole other chapter. And then, lo and behold, you find, I've grown older. When did that happen? And then a whole lot of things begin to change. We've got all, as Bruce calls it, chemical imbalances that change. Yeah, we've got a lot of things that changes. Right? And so after 45, 50 years, this blushing bride that had the beautiful dimples, her appearance is not the same. Maybe her personality is not the same. And lo and behold, we find that there's been a whole lot of changes. And we thought it was all going to be the same all the way through. Dwell with her according to knowledge. And so what we find out in older age is this whole lifetime of marriage is a learning experience, isn't it? And if you think it's not, get ready for some bumpy roads, because you're going to have a rough ride.
Yours says, according to the knowledge that you are understanding, says,
in an understanding way.
Yeah. I think part of the understanding is that not only did she change, so did you.
Yeah.
And she noticed it too.
Yeah. 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 And if you start down this path without that understanding, then you're going to be in for some rude awakenings. The reality is going to set in. And that's just the way that it is. You see, the Bible is clear when it presents the roles of the husband and the wife. And if we don't discharge those in a faithful way, then we're not going to be this blessed man that we're reading about in Psalm 128. Now help me if I've missed that. I think that's important. And sometimes we just don't acknowledge it. We read it in passing only to learn it too late. A godly wife fulfills her role, enhances the home. You know, we've often said that behind every successful man, there's a good wife that's helped him. And isn't that true? I mean, we saw that God said it's not good for a man to be alone. I will make a help meet for him, someone that's suitable to help him. So here's the happy home. And we see that it's clothed with dignity and honor. Because that's how we treat each other. And when we stop doing that, we're going to have trouble. And of course, Proverbs 31 describes the worthy woman. And these passages all together show us how God intends for the home to be. Randy?
Just a note about that. 1 Peter 3. I think the New American Standard has a bad translation there. That's my opinion. But New American Standard says, you husbands in the same way live with your wives in an understanding way as with someone weaker. There is a marginal reference next to that that says literally a weaker vessel. The literal translation is better.
Yeah.
It's not that she is a weaker person.
No.
It's that she's a weaker vessel. And the weaker vessel basically says treat your wife like fine china.
Yeah.
You don't want to break her. And you don't want to treat her like a man, like you treat your buddy. She's not your buddy. She's your wife.
Yeah.
And it's different. It's different than having a male friend. You know, that in that way, you need to treat her like something precious.
Yes. I like your illustration, a vessel of honor. That's what she is. Yeah. Weaker, you know, you can have a paper plate or you can go to Walmart and buy a tin plate. Which one's stronger? Well, the tin plate is stronger. The paper plate is weaker, but that's not the comparison. The comparison here is to the tin plate that you get from Walmart and the fine china that you inherited from your grandmother.
One's precious.
And this is how God intended for it to be. All right. Now let's talk about children. The man who is happy, going back to our text, it tells us, thy children like olive plants round about thy table. Olive plants. Any of you ever have an olive tree? All right, help me on this. An olive tree, from what I understand about it, and I've never tried to raise one, I don't know, but from what I understand about it, from an olive tree, little ones will come up around it. Is that about right? Okay. And the little ones that come up round about it, sometimes they can be pretty plentiful from what I understand. And so you validated that for me, and I appreciate that. What we know then is this man who's blessed, his children are like olive plants, young olive plants springing up around the tree, and they begin to produce. And so what you've got in this picture is the bigger tree with smaller trees and a lot of fruit. Okay? So if you like olives, there you go. And parents then are to rear godly children. The goal of this is for your children to be like the olive tree. You have your children producing the same kind of fruit that you have. And so here you go for generation, for generation, for generation. And this is what you want when you rear godly children. Now, the proverb that we've talked about a number of times, train up a child the way he should go, and when he's old, he'll not depart from it. That's a general truth. It's not an absolute. Now, an olive tree is not going to produce apple trees. We know that's so. But the proverb here is, you teach the child right, and when they grow up, then they will do right. There are exceptions to that. And, of course, we all know that that's the case. But this is the home that the Lord has built, and that's the point that's established in the 127th Psalm. They labor in vain that build the house except the Lord build it. So this is based on the fear of the Lord and walking in His ways. You want to have a home that is blessed? Then do this. Fear Him and do what He says. And your children, I think this carries the thought just a step further. In the latter part of verse 3, thy children are like olive plants round about thy table. How many of us have made it the practice of eating on TV trays in front of the television? Okay. Okay.
Not if it was family dinner time. If it's me by myself.
Okay.
But no.
All right, well, you see the point that I'm trying to make.
When our children were growing up, we made it a point that we gathered around the table and the TV was turned off.
Yeah, all right. And why? There's a lot of stuff around the dinner table that needs to be talked about. And the TV needs to be turned off, the house needs to be quiet, and we need to be together. And this is important, and I'm persuaded, frankly, that this is something that's being lost in our society. People get up in the morning, they don't eat breakfast, they go to school often without breakfast, or grab something hurriedly, a fig bar or something on the way out of the house, breakfast bar, and they don't have any time together. Just busy, 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 busy. And you know, frankly, I think sometimes, just tell you my opinion on this, I think sometimes our worship has turned into that. We do that when we go to school, we do that when we go to work, and sometimes we don't break that habit when we're getting ready to go to worship. And so we're hurry, 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 get up, get your shower, or if you didn't do it the night before, you hurry, get your clothes on, you hurry and grab something as you're running out of the house, and hurry and get in the car, and hurry into the building, and then sit down and take a deep breath and say, I'm ready to worship God. You see anything wrong with that? Well, look at this passage, and you'll see what's wrong with that. You want your children to be like an olive grove, olive plants? Then take time to spend time together around the kitchen table, to be together and solve a lot of the world's problems before they ever start. Psalm 128, verse 4, behold, thus shall be the man. A man be blessed that fears Jehovah. Now here you've got the picture of this man that's happy, stated in verse 1, stated again in verse 4. And that's a good place to quit. So we'll just stop right there. All right. Next time, we'll pick up here and finish this psalm and then proceed into Psalm 19. Psalm 19. Thank you for your comments.